welcome to At the Drive-In. I'm Tamira, and this is a podcast where I talk about movies from the 30s to the 60s, and I look at things such as the plot, the themes, characters, any funny anecdotes, and pretty much anything worth mentioning about the movie. So today I'll be looking at an absolutely classic movie, and it's also one of my favorite movies from the 50s. Unsurprisingly, but anyhow, and it is none other than The African Queen, directed by John Huston and starring the irreplaceable Katharine Hepburn and, of course, Humphrey Bogart. So, it was released in 1951 and it earned Bogart his first and his last Oscar with a very good reason, because his acting was exceptional. It was insane. Anyhow, the movie is an adaptation from the 1935 novel by C.S. Forrester. And I think that's all for now. We'll be looking at it more in depth, but now, without further ado, we're going to jump right into the story. So, we start off in a small village in German East Africa called Kangdu. And it's 1914, so as we all know, that is the beginning of the First World War. So, in this village, there's Rose and her brother, Samuel, who are two Methodist missionaries that have been sent there to spread their faith. And every few weeks, they get their supplies and food from a spirited and pretty coarse Canadian boatman called Charlie Allnut. So, Charlie has informed Rose and Samuel that Germany and Britain were at war. But instead of leaving, they decide to stay in the village, which turns out to be a pretty bad idea because not much later, German troops take over the village and forcibly recruit the villagers. Samuel tries to stand up to the Germans, but he's beaten. And in the meantime, he catches a fever as well, and he ends up dying. So Rose is left all alone, and obviously she's pretty distraught. She has really no idea what to do. And she's very aware that the Germans could come back any minute and pretty much just kill her. Because why not if they're going to just kill everybody already? So, actually, thankfully, Charlie shows up again, and he has just managed to escape the Germans who are after his supplies, which, for some reason, include gelatin explosives. Anyhow, he helps Rose bury her brother, and in the end, they set off on his little boat, which is called the African Queen. So, Charlie's goal is to escape the Germans by going north, but when Charlie tells her that the British are unable to attack the Germans because of the presence of a large German gunboat, she is adamant that they go south and blow up the boat. And basically, she wants to do this by converting the African Queen, which I should say is a very small, kind of very old as well, boat. Definitely not good for long voyages. She wants to convert it into a torpedo boat. So, needless to say, Charlie is not psyched about this proposition. So they end up arguing for a few days. They really don't get along well. They're basically the complete opposite. So Charlie, one day, because this is something he tends to do, he gets absolutely wasted and he starts insulting Rose. He eventually passes out, and as revenge, Rose pours out all his gin into the river, which honestly could not have been good for the fish or the aquatic creatures or even plants living in the river. So much gin was poured into that river. I mean, that must have had some sort of effect on the water ecosystem. But anyhow, so obviously he is not happy about this, but anyhow, Rose keeps nagging at him to go south and to destroy this German ship. And Charlie eventually consents to going south and blowing up the German ship because Rose has been nagging at him for days on end. And he's really, he can't take it anymore. So he consents finally, although he thinks the plan is absolutely bananas. Because it's important to mention that one of the reasons why Charlie does not want to go south and does not want to do what Rose wants to do is because going down the Ulonga River, which is the river they're in, is not going to be a peachy time for anybody. They have to get past several intense rapids, and in the middle of all that, they need to get past a German fort, which is going to shoot at them, obviously. So, yeah, he's not psyched about it either, but anyhow, they decide to go, so they set up. So, with pretty much all the odds stacked against them, because, yes, I think I mentioned that the African Queen is basically falling to bits, they set off to meet their destiny. Charlie is a particularly capable boatman, and Rose realizes this when they get past the first set of rapids and he's been maneuvering the boat. And Rose finds the rapids so thrilling that after they're done, she's equating the way she feels to whenever her brother gives a sermon. So she feels like she just feels so excited and thrilled and super energetic. And so she really finds it exciting. That's never happened to her before. She's never really been on an adventure like that. Definitely not been down a river with a rapid. She can't really be too happy for long because they reach the German fortress, which of course, as I said, shoots at them. But luckily, the sun is in their eyes, so they can't shoot accurately. Unfortunately, they hit the boiler. And this is not a very good thing, because they do make it past the German fortress with minimal damage, except for the boiler, which, you know, is probably not... it's not great. And it's particularly not great because the second set of rapids, which are much more intense and much more difficult and much rougher, are right upon them. So basically, Charlie has to stick by the boiler, and he manages to reattach a pressure hose to the boiler. I am not really sure what that means. I mean, I have trouble understanding car parts, let alone boat parts. Pretty sure pressure hose is not part of a boat, but I don't know what it is. Anyhow, it's obviously a good thing, reattaching this hose. So, because Charlie's next to the boiler, it's Rose who has to take charge of navigating the rapids. And they manage to get through it, although the boat does flood a bit, but they manage to get through it, and Rose is the one who got them through it, and they are so happy. Like, they are so excited. They're just hugging each other, going around in circles, and just talking about how awesome it was and how awesome it felt. And in this moment of pure joy and happiness, they kiss, right? And although there's a moment of like, oh dear, I shouldn't have done that, they quickly become lovers and enter into a really loving and sweet relationship. The journey seems at an end, though, when they get stuck in some mud and reeds, because there's not enough water, so Charlie trumps out to try to move the boat physically, manually, but doesn't budge, and on top of that, he comes out of it covered in leeches, which is not very pleasant at all. Anyhow, they try different things, they try again to budge it, but nothing happens, they can't get it out of there. And in the end, they are so exhausted and weak that they accept that they're just gonna die there, and there's nothing they can do about it. Now, in a miraculous turn of events, it starts to rain. So it rains all during the night, and this is enough to raise the river's level and get the African Queen moving again on its jolly way to destroy this German gunboat. So they finally make it to the lake where the Königin Luisa, the German gunboat, is stationed. And from then on, they set their plan in motion. So they convert some oxygen cylinders they have into torpedoes by adding gelatin explosive and improvised detonators. And basically, the plan is to collide the African Queen with the Luisa. An argument promptly ensues over who will be the one to stay on the boat until the very last moment. But in the end, they decide that they wouldn't want to live without each other, so that they would do it together, which is very sweet. Anyhow, they set out at night to do it. And so they have everything ready. They've made two holes to put the torpedoes in, and they're making their way merrily to blow up the German gunboat, when out of nowhere a very powerful storm hits, and water pours into the boat through the holes where the torpedoes are, and eventually the boat capsizes, and once they are both in the water, Charlie loses sight of Rose. So Charlie ends up being captured by the Germans, and he is being interrogated by the Germans, being asked what he was doing, whether he was a spy. But he's just thinking about Rose, and he obviously thinks she's dead, so he's not defending himself at all. He's just ready to accept his fate and he's destined to be executed. But all of a sudden, Rose turns up, and it turns out that she had survived also, and that she'd been fished out by the germs as well. And as Charlie thought of something to say to get them both out of it, they basically lie to the Germans. Rose tells them proudly that they were gonna blow up their ship, and this, of course, gets her a death sentence. Even though the German captain doesn't really believe her, and he basically thinks that they're nuts. Anyhow, before they're gonna get executed, Rose asks the German captain to marry them. So, fairly sure you can't just turn to the closest person to you and ask him or her to marry you, but the captain didn't really seem to be bothered by this, and I don't think he even had the qualifications, but he just did so anyways, because at that point he was just like, wow, these people are really crazy, I'll just do this for them, because why not? So, emotionally, they're married, and before they can actually get killed, the Louisa hits the wreck of the African Queen, which has sunk to the riverbed, and it explodes, because it obviously it's apparently hit one of the torpedoes which sets it off. And yeah, it explodes, and Rose and Charlie jump overboard and swim away to safety together. And that is the end of this amazing journey. Okay, first of all, what a movie. I mean, this is one of my favorite movies from the 50s, as I said, and I mean, how can it not be? I mean, it's famous for a reason, because if you just think about it, it's so different from so many movies that were being made at the time. And okay, obviously, I mean, we can't kid ourselves. Honestly, one of the most fundamental and most insanely good parts of the movie is, of course, the performances by Katharine Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart. I mean, Hepburn is absolutely fantastic in embodying her role, the way she would radiate with excitement and thrill and her strong and determined presence throughout, and just how pleased she was and how much she wanted to do something for her country. She was just delightful to watch. I think anybody would agree with me. One of the very important things about this movie that just really strikes me, and I just think, like, holy hell, this is amazing. It's Humphrey Bogart's performance. I think it's probably my favorite role that Humphrey Bogart has played, just because I think for the initial surprise when I watched this movie for the first time, it was so unexpected. When I saw Bogart's character, when I saw Charlie, right? I mean, let's be honest. We all associate Humphrey Bogart with, like, the suave, sophisticated, the mysterious, also to a certain degree, of course, with the genre of film noir, which he's so known for, and also he's really good at. But this is literally the complete opposite. I've never seen Bogart play any role akin to this one. And I mean, I have watched quite a few movies of him. Obviously, not all of them, so maybe I'm missing out on something. But it was just mind-blowing. I just, out of all the characters I've seen him play, I haven't seen him play anything like this. Charlie is, of course, he's unruly, and yet he's very endearing in the end. And he has this, like, childlike excitement, and he's brave, and he's full of love for Rose in the end, and he shows this, and he's very caring. And I just think Bogart, he embodies this character so realistically and so well. It's such an amazing movie just for the performances themselves, not to say everything else about the movie, which is just amazing. But anyhow, so honestly, I think everybody needs to watch this movie just to see Katharine Hepburn and Humphrey Bogart just be amazing. Anyhow, I should probably stop talking about how amazing I think these actors are and actually get down to it. So there's a lot of production behind the movie, unsurprisingly. So a large part of the movie was actually shot in Uganda and the Congo upon John Huston's insistence. And you have to understand how unusual this was to go to such a great extent and to undergo such a rough time, because it was rough for the people. It was rough for the cast and the crew. I'm going to talk about it, but it was rough. And then to go through all of that just to film a made-up story? I mean, anyone would think he was nutty. Anyone would think that was nuts. But I think that's what makes movies so special and so original, because I feel like it really helped Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn mold to their characters and make it seem very real and very human and very urgent and immediate, you know? And that's the striking thing about the movie, is the excitement, is the feeling you get when you watch it. It's all to do with it being taking place for a large part. Of course, it's not all filmed in the Congo and in Uganda. So mostly the scenes that took place in the water were filmed in tanks in Middlesex, England, because they thought that maybe filming the scenes in an actual genuine river in the Congo was just a tad bit too dangerous. What with the crocodiles and leeches and anything else lurking there in the water. So yeah, they thought, you know, maybe we shouldn't do that. And I think they made the right call, right? Because remember when I mentioned the thing about the rough conditions? Yes. Well, pretty much all the crew and the cast of the movie got pretty sick. I would say really sick during the filming of this. Mostly due to the water they were drinking, which was obviously not clean enough. There's a scene at the beginning of the movie where Samuel and Rose are preaching in this little makeshift church in the village. And Rose is playing this piano. And apparently during that scene, Catherine kept a bucket right next to the piano, of course, out of shot, because every few takes she would be throwing up between takes, basically. I mean, it must have been so difficult for her and for everyone, all of them are there who were struggling, but who had to keep filming. I mean, I think it's a lot of respect for all of them and for the perseverance and determination. And it just goes to show just how difficult the conditions were. And Humphrey Bogart often said that the reason that he and John Huston were the only two not to get sick was because they basically lived off whiskey instead of water for the whole time they were filming. So guys, next time you're gonna go off on an adventure in the jungle, forget about taking water. Just pack some Jack Daniels and you'll be fine, okay? Anyhow, the steamboat, the African Queen, was built in 1912 in the UK and it was actually used for service in Africa during the First World War. And for the scenes that took place on the boat, they used a large raft, with the top part of the raft being modeled after the original, but it wasn't the original itself. Many parts of the boat could be detached and move around so as to get better angles, and this turned out to be quite dangerous. Especially considering the boiler, which was loose and at one point nearly fell on Hepburn. So that was another dangerous aspect of filming. I should probably mention that originally Charlie Onlet was supposed to speak with a very strong Cockney accent because he was supposed to be English. But Humphrey Bogart couldn't do it, so they switched his character to being Canadian, which, I don't know, it seems kind of random because there's nothing in the movie that really indicates that he's Canadian, but why not, you know? Okay, so now to look at the movie itself and some themes we can find. So undoubtedly, the biggest theme in the movie is love. I mean, who honestly believed Rose and Charlie would fall in love, right? I mean, well, you know what? Probably everybody saw it coming, because it is a movie from the 50s and it does consist of a man and a woman being in close proximity to one another for a very long time. So let's just, I guess everybody saw it coming, but let's just say it was unexpected. I mean, and it was unexpected in a way, because, I mean, Rose and Charlie could not have been more different. You have Charlie, who's an alcoholic. He's a pretty easygoing guy. He just wants to spend time on his boat and avoid responsibility, and basically wants to avoid people who will nag at him and tell him what to do. Cut to Rose nagging at him and telling him what to do endlessly, right? So they're the complete opposite. Rose is bossy, to say the very least, and she's very used to getting her own way, and she thinks that the more she nags at someone, the more likely she's gonna get what she wants. And you know what? She's not wrong, because that's basically what Charlie, in the end, he's like, oh my, so he just gives in because, anyhow. So Rose is also very religious, so she goes as a missionary, and understandably, she is appalled by Charlie's affinity for gin, hence the pouring it into the river and probably killing a bunch of fish. So really, it's no surprise that they don't get along at all. Slowly, these seemingly very big differences start melting away, and Charlie and Rose get to know each other a bit more. So Rose begins to admire Charlie's ability as a boatman, and Charlie feels compelled to do what Rose wants, not only because she nagged at him, although that is a very big reason, let's not lie to ourselves, but also because he realizes how much it means to her, right? And their differences just fall away gradually throughout the movie, and they suddenly become these two humans on an unforgettable adventure doing things that are quite frankly insane. So like going past a German fort and then hoping to blow up a huge German gumbo with a tiny boat that they're gonna make into a torpedo boat. I mean, you know, they're two humans doing some crazy ass shit. And then of course, by the end of the movie, they do have this very, very big thing in common, which is ultimately the most important, and it transcends any of the other differences that they may have. And that is their love for each other and their deep devotion, which is so powerful that they would rather die than live without each other. So that, of course, is something that unites them. And love is presented as something to work on, but also something indestructible in the midst of chaos and war, and also able to close any distances, no matter the people, no matter the characters, and no matter the circumstances. So love is, of course, a big theme in this movie. Now, another theme, which is kind of difficult to explain, and it's not exactly, I don't even know if this can be referred to as a theme, but I'm gonna do so anyways, is that of humanity. So what I mean to say by this is that throughout the movie, there's this undercurrent of what humans are capable of doing under arduous circumstances. It shows how people who are determined and strong can overcome adversity in any shape and form. It points out the importance of human agency and how humans possess the qualities and values to do whatever they decide to get done, you know? And also highlights the significance of humans, especially when shown being confronted by such a formidable opponent as nature. So of course, the circumstances in which Rose and Charlie find themselves sometimes are quite dire circumstances. So of course, they suffer being stuck in the mud when they can't move the boat and then being capsized at the end. Their boat gets flooded when they have to go through the rapids. And yet, in spite of all this, they still make it out. And not only do they make it out, but they succeed. And although this movie kind of portrays humans and nature as being enemies, I like to think that to a certain extent there is a harmonious, more or less harmonious relationship between humans and nature, in spite of everything that humans tend to do to nature, which basically destroy it. Anyhow, back to the theme of humanity. Although there's a war going on, human life still persists and is still strong, in spite of the destruction that obviously comes alongside a war. And this obviously directly links to another theme, which is war. And there's this notion of the duty to do good. And Rose sees it as a moral human obligation to do anything to defeat the enemy at whatever cost, which in turn links to another, these are smaller themes and they kind of all wrapped up together. So another theme in the movie is that of patriotism. Again, Rose is certain that she can defeat the Germans because she is English, and that she says that that's worth more than a room full of Germans. Those are her words, okay? They're not mine. That's what she says. But anyhow, so this is really, there's this feeling of pride and duty to her nation, England, well, UK. So there's that connection to one's nation, although honestly, Allnut does not show any of that at all. He's not really patriotic at all. He just kind of follows along. So it's more on Rose's behalf. So those are some of the themes of the movie, although most of them are quite small and they're all kind of intertwined, whereas the really big one is that of love, you know. And then there's imagery in the movie, which is very powerful. The movie starts off with shots of the jungle while the credits are rolling on the screen. And the shots of the jungle are a way into easing the audience into this new and unfamiliar place and making it clear that they were going to be taking a trip far away from home and basically telling themselves to prepare themselves, brace themselves. You don't know what's coming, buddy, within these leaves and in this river and all that. So there are all these shots of the jungle until we reach the village. Now, unsurprisingly, the native people of the village are not shown in a favorable light. At one point, Charlie throws his half-finished cigar on the floor and a tussle begins because everybody wants to get hold of it. During this kerfuffle, there is a sermon going on in the little makeshift church where Rose and her brother Samuel are preaching and singing. And one by one, people start exiting the small church to join the tussle until basically everybody's attention is more focused on what's going on outside them rather than inside. And in the end, they eventually all rush out. Here's the thing. They're basically, it's not even implicit, guys. They're basically almost shown as savages who care more about a cigar than religion or God. So obviously, this is completely wrong. They're not savages. They simply don't really give a shit about people who randomly walked into their village telling them what to believe in and pretty much telling them what to do as well. Again, this is the blatant racism in these movies is just so gross and nasty and it's horrible. I mean, it's not surprising, really, it's not surprising, but it's still really unpleasant to see. And I thought, you just mentioned that because when I first saw it, I felt really uncomfortable. I was like, geez. Anyhow. Although that is a problem and that is not good at all. I mean, that's to say the least. I'm not saying this makes everything okay, but there is the colonialism that is clearly taking place at the time. Of course, 1914, everybody wants a piece of Africa. The colonialism, especially in this part, it's represented, it's manifested by the Germans. It's definitely shown as something, as a barbaric thing, as something that is horrible and horrific, atrocious, and it really is condemned because they show the Germans burning the village, kidnapping people, and it is shown in a very terrible light, which at least is good because, you know, they could have been showing it as the Germans having a right to boss these people around. Thank goodness that was not the case because Germans were definitely shown as being brutal and cruel. So anyhow, you know, it's definitely, yeah, as I said, it doesn't make everything else okay. Again, it doesn't make it, you know, doesn't justify it. It doesn't suddenly be like, oh, you know what? Well, they did this, so it's fine. But I think in these movies, the small things have to be milked for all they're worth. Because if not, just be focusing on the horrible parts, which obviously should be acknowledged. Because again, the 50s were not a good time for many, many, many people. Anyhow, the jungle imagery is very important to set the scene. And although it might at first appear as something very exotic and somewhat almost fictional and unbelievable because the location just seems so foreign to people, I guess, living in the U.S. watching this movie for the first time, the movie still maintains a touch with reality because of the characters that feel so real. So the audience can still identify with the characters, even though the circumstances are completely different to anything they've ever experienced. Again, that's something I just find absolutely impressive about the movies. It's the location and the fact they actually went there. That's absolutely, it's just bananas. It's mind-blowing. It's so cool. And just imagine watching that at the movies for the first time in 1951. What? Where you're so used to, like, these film noir and, you know, detective and crime stories and romantic dramas. I mean, this is definitely a romantic drama to a certain extent. I would say romantic adventure movie. But I mean, holy moly. I mean, it must have been amazing. I mean, it was mind-blowing for me, so imagine for them. Unusually for a John Huston movie, this movie has a happy ending. And Huston, just to give you a few examples, he directed movies such as The Maltese Falcon and The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. Both have not very happy endings. And he tends to show the bleakest side of humanity. The difference with his other movies, however, is that the characters in this movie are more noble, as opposed to the more seedy and cunning characters in his other movies. So as a result of this, they get a happy ending. So to conclude this episode on the African Queen, I have to say that as I just said, sorry, but this is first and foremost an adventure movie. And yes, there are themes that touch upon deeper questions like that of war and patriotism and colonialism to a certain extent. this movie, more than being about the themes, it's more about the excitement and the action, the thrill, and the urgency presented in the movie. And I like to think of it more as a movie about feeling rather than thinking. So that concludes the episode for today. Thank you so much for listening. This movie is absolutely fantastic. The African Queen, it is just, it's very original and it's just so exciting. There's such superb acting. Anyhow, thank you so much for listening, and please wash your hands and be careful. And anyhow, thank you and have a very good evening.